Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast, where we are getting very, very close to the start of the Premier League season now. Everton have played their final pre-season match of the summer, beating Dynamo Kiev 3-0. I'm going to go with 3-0. There's a bit of confusion, I suppose, of whether it was 3 or 4-0, but I think we'll stick with 3-0 at Goodison Park last Friday. I'm your host today, Adam Jones, joined by Joe Thomas and Gav Buckland, where we'll be going over that Dynamo Kiev match, a couple of the players who stood out from that Kiev match. We'll talk about the pitch invasions after that game as well, and the club's response to it. And of course, we've got transfer talk still to talk about as well for the next month, which is going to be nice and lovely, isn't it? But Joe, we'll start with that Dynamo Kiev match. It was still a pre-season game, wasn't it? It was a charity match, of course. So maybe you don't read too much into the performance, but what did you make of Everton?
I thought there were still some positives at the end of the day. You know, I thought they started really well. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin got the goal and they looked quite threatening for the first half an hour. It dropped off a little bit after that, or at least dropped off until Dwight McNeil came on. But, you know, I thought for the most part, there were positive signs. I like the way they started. I like the fact that, obviously, the big question going into it, I think, for a lot of us was after Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Damari Gray had missed the Blackpool game as a precaution, would they be available and what kind of level of fitness would they be at? Because I think all of us were probably, you know, staring into the abyss a little bit after Blackpool before, you know, blinking heck, if Everton are starting the season having sold Richarlison and potentially with Calvert-Lewin suffering more injury issues, then we could be in for a real slog. As it happened, I thought Calvert-Lewin looked quite fit. He was very busy in that first half an hour. He got the goal. He read the ball well. Another example of what James Tarkowski can do when he's on the ball, if you give him a bit of time and space. We know that Everton have, you know, a few weaknesses in midfield, in particular when it comes to things like creativity. I'm not saying that Tarkowski is going to fill that, but if he can get a little bit of time and space from the ball, we have now seen across the last three preseason games that he can pick a man out if someone's making the run, which is positive. Calvert-Lewin had the wherewithal to make the run, and it was quite a clever header for the goal. I think it's important that he got a goal in pre-season. Obviously, this was his last chance to do so. But also for the next half an hour or so, his all-round play was quite good. He looked quite active. He won quite a lot of the balls with it fired into him up top. Laid off to Damari Gray once or twice. You know, he nearly forced a keeper into a good save from close range. Had a good header from a Damari Gray cross that went just high and wide. So I thought Calvert-Lewin was a positive. I also liked Nathan Patson. You know, he backed up his really impressive performance against Blackpool, again, with a really entertaining first 20 minutes. You know, he was repeatedly found by Abdoulaye Doucouré down the right, and you know, he was happy to drive into the space, deliver a ball when he had the opportunity, but also had the sense to, when there wasn't somebody in the box, just to pull the ball back and come back to midfield rather than waste possession. So I thought those were positive signs, as of course was Dwight McNeil coming on scoring two goals in quick succession, which, you know, I think we've all spent a couple of days looking at that stat where, you know, people were bandying around where he got no goals and one assist in the whole of last season. It's only a pre-season friendly as well, but obviously two goals in 5 minutes is a positive sign. So
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about Dwight McNeil later on, Gav. But we saw Everton line up with a five at the back on Friday. And I know there's still, from that point on, there was still 8 days before the start of the Premier League season. But do you think that's a strong hint at what, with the current squad of players, at the very least, Frank Lampard thinks is probably the best way to set his side up for at least the first couple of weeks of the season?
Absolutely. I think we said last week that'll be Friday be a big indicator of where the Chelsea lineup's going to come from. I think it's not just having, there's a couple of things there, isn't it? Having five at the back means we can push the full backs on, and given the lack of midfield creativity, in the modern game, fullbacks are creators, aren't they? Probably just even more than what they are defenders, some would say. Same for the top clubs. I think there's that. I think that the second aspect is it, you know, gives us strength in the middle of the defence. And I think the third, it also takes care of, to a certain degree, our lack of options, defensive options in midfield at the moment. So I think as long as we've not got a sort of recognised defensive midfielder, and I don't class Alan as a defensive midfielder, I think three may be the way forward. Within that, that depends on a few issues, i.e. Mina's fitness. So, yeah, I think I like three at the back. If we can get Tarkowski and Mina in there, and I think probably play Godfrey. He doesn't necessarily seem to be a natural fit for me. The only thing with Keane is, I mean, I know Tarkowski can knock the ball is forwards and his long passes and stuff. Is Keane, for the, though he can be maligned, is actually quite decent with the ball at his feet, and that's what you want in the back three. From somebody in the middle, you can bring the ball out. That's the only downside, not having him in the team. But if you have a back three of me and the Tarkowski, maybe Godfrey, with two overlapping fullbacks, yeah, I'd take that. I think that would be a decent springboard to build on for the rest of the team.
I think Gav's quite right, isn't he, Joe, that, you know, while we're talking about the strengths of, you know, having three centre-backs and allowing to push the wing-backs a little bit further forward, there's still a lot of questions going on about that midfield. And, you know, we looked before the game at a midfield of Alex Iwobi and Abdoulaye Doucouré, and I called it bold. And it did prove to be a little bit bold, didn't it? But do you think it worked? Like, it's very tough to know what sort of, if we are going to set up with this system, for example, against Chelsea, it's very tough to know which two central midfielders Lampard's actually going to pick, isn't it?
It is. I think when it comes to Friday, yeah, I think it was fair to say that was quite an experimental midfield selection. And speaking to Frank Lampard after the game, the reality, you know, asked him, was this something that had been planned, something you work on in training, or is this just a response to the situation you've got in your hands at the moment? I think the reality is that it was injuries that forced him into playing along those lines. You know, after the game, he confirmed that, you know, amongst several players that are out, you know, Andre Gomes and Tom Davis, who are both options in centre midfield. Andre Gomes hasn't played any minutes in pre-season, which, I mean, there might be some injury issues there, but that might give some indication as to where he lies on Lampard's thoughts. Davis had started a couple of games, scored against Blackpool, but he had a knock as well. Alan has been recovering over the summer from injury, and I think that's why he started on the bench. He did come on for the past 50 minutes. We can't be far off, but he's clearly not quite ready to start. So I think we know that Doucouré is a centre midfielder, and I think the reality is that it's probably another case in his Everton career where Alex Iwobi's versatility and fitness means that he's a square peg in a round hole. But they did all right. I mean, again, there wasn't a huge amount riding on the game. It's a Kiev side that, you know, been in Champions League qualifying action only a couple of days earlier. And so we probably shouldn't read too much into it. I thought the two played quite well, and Frank was quite vocal in his praise for how they handled the situation on Friday night. But I don't think that's something that they're going to choose to look at to start the season with. Obviously, if a couple of players remain injured or pick up injuries, he might be forced into it. But I don't think that's been some sort. I don't think a midfield two of Doucouré and Iwobi has been part of some sort of cunning plan that Lampard's about to unleash in the league. But I think, yeah, five at the back, you know, three centre backs. It just plays to the strengths of that squad at the moment, and the strength of the squad lies in the centre backs. I like the look of Patterson and Mikulenko, but I also think that they're still very. I mean, Patterson hasn't even played a game in the Premier League, so they're still very raw and learning their trade. And I think the pressure of playing four at the back and those two as fullbacks would perhaps allow Everton to be exposed a little bit too much, especially when you haven't got a defensive midfield in front that can perhaps provide a bit of cover for one of them if they go forward. So quite often they say that, you know, attack is the best form of defence. And I think in Everton's case at the moment, defence is the best form of attack, because in Mikulenko and in Patterson, if you put three centre-backs there and you give them the freedom to go up and down the flanks, we've seen that their end product is actually quite good so far. And obviously, if we've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin one of the things that really he really struggled with, I think, at the back end of last season when he was playing, was the fact that Everton, through necessity, had changed style. So it wasn't like, under Ancelotti, where they were, you know, focusing on crossing the ball into the box for him. It was, again, a lot of it was coming through the middle. Well, now we haven't got Richarlison, and there are still issues in the centre midfield. So if you're in a situation where we've got a fully fit Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front, what you want is balls on his head, and Mikalenko and Patterson are probably the safest routes providing that.
I think if we're talking about in that sense as well, Dwight McNeil's probably going to play a crucial role in that sense. And, you know, I'm not sure we've actually had a chance to speak about this, that transfer on the podcast. It came quite quickly last week that Everton has agreed to deal with Burnley, and things seem to move quite quickly on that front. Gav, I mean, just your initial thoughts on Dwight McNeil. What do you make of him? Are you excited to see him in Royal Blue?
Well, we've been linked with him before, haven't we? I would like to have heard the conversation, by the way, Burnley, given my Burnley's sort of question marks over our financial stability in the last season, like, you know, where you get the money from.
We want that cash up front.
We know your skin, but we'll take your money anyway, you know. So I like my, and this is before Friday, so you shouldn't read too much into it. I think I like McNeil. I was thinking, by the way, he scored a great goal, didn't he, against us, for Burnley, about players who score great goals against Everton, who've laid to sign for us. And I was thinking, I can only think of McNeil. I remember Yakubu scored a great one for Portsmouth, didn't he, at the Gladys Street end in 2004-05, you know. But setting that aside, I like McNeil, and I don't need too much into his stats either. In fact, I think he's very much of an unknown quantity, isn't he, really? Which is a good thing, in terms of that's reflected in the fee. In that, we all know the constraints that are placed on Burnley players and the style of play, and that not necessarily great if you're a forward or attacking player in terms of your stats. And there's a distinct possibility that, and this is a really positive thing for Everton, that his potential wasn't even nowhere near reached at Burnley, especially given his age as well. He
22.
Yeah. You know, so though it's you know, the fee, there's a cash sum involved, I think there's a lot of potential there, and I wouldn't read too much into his stats and say, oh yeah, it's too much for a player who didn't contribute much last year on face value. You buy potential, and that way the fee and the way the fee is structured based on, you know, installments and given our financial circumstances, the fee and the structure of it is not a problem either. And take all that into account, I think it's a good deal. And I think a left-footed attacking option is something that we really had, have we, over the last 5 or 6 years? Who do you have?
James
for the year. James for the year. When not on flying to South America on his bed. And I think that's it. So it's something different as well that we've not really had. And I am really excited by that. And I know you can say a lot about pre-season, what they mean. I think he'll be feeling a lot better about joining Everton after scoring two on Friday.
I think Gav's right about the transfer fee, really, isn't he? Because this is the kind of deal that I suppose you want to see Everton chasing after. You know, they were very interested in Dwight McNeil last year. You know, I think I remember at the time talk of a fee of about 30 million, 35 million. Now, obviously, he didn't have this kind of season that he would have wanted last season in terms of, you know, sheer goals and assists. But, you know, if you look at his other numbers in terms of chances created, for example, he was still creative for that Burnley team, wasn't he? So if Everton can get, you know, harness that sort of potential that Dwight McNeil has, as Gav rightly says as well, he's still only young, feels like he's older because he's been around the Premier League so long. But if Everton can tap into that potential, they've essentially bought somebody at their lowest, really, isn't it? Which you know, is quite savvy transfer business.
Yeah, I think so. Everton aren't in a situation at the moment where they can buy players whose star is on the rise. Yeah, they can't buy players who are at the top of their game, or players that have got a lot of forward momentum at the moment because of the, you know, the financial limitations. and also perhaps in terms of attracting those type of players to a club that only just missed out on a relegation last season. Ben Dwight McNeil, they've got somebody who's just 22 years old. He's got 134 Premier League appearances. I mean, that's an enormous amount of experience. You know, did he do particularly well last season? Okay, you know, his core stats suggest that he didn't. But obviously, he was playing in a Burnley side that perhaps struggled for a bit of creativity and struggled in general, and that's why they went down. But one of the things that we've already seen so far in pre-season across the four games is in the signing of James Tarkowski, everyone knew that Everton were going to get a leader. They knew they were going to get somebody who was a strong, resilient, you know, presence at the back. Perhaps what we didn't realise so much, and maybe it's a lack of my own knowledge on Tarkowski, but it was just how good he is on the ball. Mm. You know, it has been patently obvious over the friendlies that they've played so far, just what he can do with a little bit of time on the ball, a little bit of space. He's got a lot of vision, and he's produced quite a lot of, you know, quite a fair bit of an attacking threat so far. And he played a ball over the top that nearly set up Gordon against Minnesota United. He switched play to start the move that started for Everton's first goal against Blackpool. He played a through ball for Rondon against Blackpool to create a one-on-one, which, you know, Rondon isn't the quickest. And by the time he got his shot underway, a one-on-one wasn't a one-on-one anymore, but that wasn't Tarkowski's fault. And of course, Tarkowski scored the first, played the ball over the top for Calvert-Lewin for the first goal on Friday. So, you know, we've already seen that there are more sides to Tarkowski's game than were perhaps visible whilst he was at Burnley last season. I don't think it's beyond, I don't think it's beyond the imagination to think that McNeil might have the same kind of potential in his locker that might be able to be unleashed in a better side or under a different manager, a different set of circumstances.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think, Gav, that a lot of people are getting, I don't want to say hung up on his goals and assists, because in a way I can understand why people are maybe questioning the goals and assists output, because let's face it, Everton need goals in this team right now, especially after the exit of Richarlison, who was the club's top scorer last season. They need to replace his goals somehow. And, you know, I think we've said multiple times on this podcast that Everton can't just replace Richarlison with one player. And do you think the signing of McNeil kind of exemplifies that? Do they need somebody else who's going to come in and be, you know, a bit more of a goal scorer rather than a creator up there?
Well, both. We've just said about Calvert-Lewin needs creativity around him, don't we? So you're looking for both. I wouldn't get too hung up over the stats. And Joe, the piece you did with Paul Clement, was it last week, which I think was really illuminating. And I was more than happy to see him say that, you know, those stats are important. They are not an end in itself. Mm. That you look at the player as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I, that's the thinking I like. There's far too much emphasis played on stats in terms of personal players for me. And this is proof of that, isn't it? That the club have looked at it, but they're not looking at the stats really. They're looking at them as a player. Mm-hmm. So I see a bit of both. I'd, to be honest, a few goals, but I'm looking forward to being creative and just giving us other options, because he's left-footed. And we said before on the pod, there's worse transfer strategies than buying the best players of clubs who've just been relegated. Mm. I mean, some of the best players in the Premier League in the position have been in that scenario, haven't they? Our goalkeeper, for one.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry the fact that he's gone down, and I think in a different team with the different players and different emphasis, he can really, really flourish. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him in a blue shirt. I think he'll be a star for us.
Mm. I mean, just sticking with you, Gav, as well. If we're talking about Everton's formation perhaps being with this wing back sort of role, I don't think, like me and Joe were discussing this at the game. On Friday, you can't really play wing backs and, you know, out and out wingers in the same sort of system, can you? And do you think McNeil maybe fits into you know, this inside forward role a little bit more, as you say, cutting inside onto his left foot sort of thing.
Yeah. Playing closer to Calvert-Lewin, if Calvert-Lewin's a central striker. Yeah. There's some interesting selection issues there, isn't there? I suppose. Because if we do like 3-4-3, and, you know, in the middle four are two overlapping full backs and two midfielders, you know, that leaves three up top. And I'm just wondering, maybe at the start of the pod, we were talking about playing overlapping full backs in a back five or whatever, or three centre. Who the front three would be? Calvert-Lewin's, I think, nailed on. Then there's several options there, isn't it? That are not necessarily like sort of. They overlap, don't they? Literally, Gordon and McNeil.
I'd say right now that's probably the strongest pairing for me.
Yeah,
quite possibly. I mean, Iwobi has looked in really good shape throughout pre-season, and that's probably playing him behind a striker is probably, but more central is probably playing him in his best position.
Dele Alli,
similarly. Yeah. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing. We're almost the case of you're building the formation in a way that suits Everton's strengths at the minute, and in having three centre, you know, Everton are strong in the centre back options. You know, you would think that between the players that they've got, there should be a relatively effective partnership. You know, between the six main centre backs that they've got, if to get those three. And the other thing is, yeah, players that can play at number 10 or an inside winger. And I suppose that's it. The reality, if you play a formation like that and you've got Damari Gray, you've got Anthony Gordon, you've got Alex Iwobi, you've got Ali, you've got McNeil, you know, what you are doing is you're creating a scenario where, first of all, you're going to have legs that are always going to be pestering a defence, which when we've got five substitutions this season, that might be useful. Being able to bring on fresh players that can fit into that formation easily, and secondly, you're probably taking a little bit of pressure off a lot of the other players, because rather than relying on one person to have a brilliant season, you know, but between that, hopefully they can share the responsibility and you can find a bit more creativity and a few more goals from midfield. All of a sudden, Everton need maybe that to click for one or two players from five or six options, as opposed to only having. If you play two up front, there's only Calvert-Lewin, so you're entirely reliant on Calvert-Lewin. So it's almost a case of spreading the responsibility in the same way that, you know, in that formation, we probably imagine there's two sitting midfield, centre midfielders in front of the defence. Again, it's spreading the responsibility, because whether we like it or not, Everton probably don't have the quality for one person to take that position by the scruff of the neck. Everton probably need to play with two centre midfielders that have almost a protective role, because they haven't got an out-and-out defensive midfielder at the moment.
And I mean, sticking with you, Joe, as well, you know, it was a really good atmosphere, I thought, at the game on Friday, but it did kind of end in probably less than ideal circumstances, with a few fans running onto the pitch. We saw the club release a statement over the weekend saying that stadium bans and criminal prosecution can and will be enforced to punish anyone that enters the playing area. The trend of children being sent onto the pitch has recently increased in prevalence, and this cannot and will not be tolerated. It was a strange end to the match, wasn't it, in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, it was bizarre in the first place, because we had the situation with Paul Stratton where he came on to take the penalty, which was a lovely moment. Yes. A lovely moment that I'm not sure a lot of people quite knew was coming.
No. the Dynamo Kiev players were looking around going,
Even myself, when I saw that they had the penalty, I looked up from my computer where I was typing my full-time match burner, and I was thinking, what have I missed? Who's been brought down for this? But obviously, that was a lovely moment. And then after that, we saw the same against Blackpool with young fans running onto the pitch. Trying to meet their heroes, and we want to encourage an environment where young Everton fans can come and enjoy the match, and obviously we want to try and create unity and a relationship between those young supporters and the players on the pitch. But having them or a selection, and even if it's a small number of them coming onto pitch at the end, just isn't the best way to do that, I don't think. Everton have come out of it being quite clear that it might be your child that's running onto the pitch, but don't think that the guardian who is responsible for them will avoid penalty as a result. And I think that's probably a message that just needs to be shared, just so people understand that there could be serious consequences for what is, you know, essentially quite an innocent thing, but something that shouldn't be allowed. And I think that, you know, again, just look at what happened with Everton over the course of last season on a number of different fronts. I don't want to sound all doom and gloom, but it does feel a bit like any opportunity to punish Everton, you know, the authorities might sometimes take. Mm-hmm. Just don't give them the opportunity to do so in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, these type of incidents can have a real impact on the lives of the families of the children who do this, and also just, you know, potentially on the club as well. Both of them would be detrimental. It'd be a shame for that enthusiasm and that joy that following football can bring to children to end up having, you know, negative consequences for their families and the clubs as well. So the club are saying don't do it. I think hopefully the message gets through. Just, we've had a couple of incidents now. I can understand why people might have thought it would be okay to a certain extent before, but now there's no excuse for that naivety. You know, just express your joy and support for Everton and your love, your children's enjoyment of the game in different ways, I think. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it won't happen against Chelsea and hopefully it won't happen again.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed. I don't think it's necessarily an Everton-specific trend, is it?
It's something
that we've seen at a lot of Premier League grounds over the course of the last few months. I think that did happen at the Community Shield game as well, maybe.
City,
but like Gav, what do you make of it all? It seems to have sprung up out of nowhere a little bit, this trend, but you know, I think the club are quite right in trying to hammer down on it as much as possible right now, aren't they?
Oh yeah, it's criminal offences, isn't it? You know, penalty, you know, points penalties, ground closures. The club's quite right to warn people off, and you know, say the. So we'll take the right sort of sanctions if you transgress. I just feel sorry for the ground staff who spent like 2 months, 10 weeks trying to perfect a perfect playing surface for the season. They got like thousands of people trampled on it, you know. And, you know, if you ever, I mean, you've walked on the Goodison turf. I mean, it is perfect.
You can imagine
like a lot of people walking on it can cause, you know, considerable damage. So they're the people I feel really sorry for. Yeah, and I people say it's harmless. I disagree. I thought the scenes against Palace were quite worrying. I think we were quite lucky to get away with what we did there. I think there was a few incidents with Palace players, you know, not just at the end. I think after one of the goals that were slightly worrying. And if I'd have been on the pitch, I would have been very wary. Because at the end of the day, you do not know what somebody's carrying or what their intentions are. It's all very well saying, oh, come on, have a laugh and a sing. And, you know, you just don't know, do you? And as somebody watched a lot of football in the 1970s where it was quite violent in the ground and on the pitch, I still remember those days, and that warning still applies now from history. So I in that context, I fully support the club and I hope everybody behaves themselves on Saturday and for the remainder of the season, both home and away as well, to be honest with you.
I completely agree with that sentiment. But from there, we'll move on to some transfer talk. Of course, we've got transfer talk to discuss, and I think probably the name on everybody's lips right now is Idris Agai, isn't it? You know, another move that seemingly came out of the blue a little bit last week, a potential return to Goodison Park for Idris Agai. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. I don't want to date us too much, Joe, but you know, as things stand right now, what's the position as we understand it?
Yeah, I mean, as we understand it, the position seems that there is genuine interest there. I'm not sure that anything is imminent, but I think there is definitely interest there from the Everton side. There are some talks ongoing. Whether they end up with him coming to the club or not, we'll have to wait and see. Another midfielder that was linked quite heavily with Everton at the end of last week was Ross Barkley, who was also another returning midfielder. According to some of the reports, there's nothing in that. I think quite confident in being able to rule that out.
I think we can thank our lucky stars, to be honest.
But yeah, so there's no secret that you know, Frank Lampard wants to strengthen his midfield. And I think there's also no secret that Everton have their hands tied to some extent in this transfer window. And it appears that at least some element of their search has taken them to at least exploring the idea of Guy. As I say, whether or not that comes into fruition, I'm not sure, but I think he's a name on a list at the moment.
Mm. I mean, Gav, in terms of Idrissa Guy, 2019, Idrissa Guy leaves Everton after a few months of speculation, moves on to join PSG. Everton start their hunt for an Idrissa Guy replacement, essentially, in the squad. 3 years later, that hunt's still going on, and it could well end with Idrissa Guy replacing Idrissa Guy. I mean, I understand what Joe's saying about, you know, the hand that the Everton have been dealt with, essentially, in terms of this transfer window, and, you know, I'm not discounting how good Idrissa Guy is as a footballer. Obviously, he's a fantastically gifted player, but it kind of does sum up the transfer failings that Everton have had over the last few years, doesn't it? That they've ended up circling back around to this position.
Yeah. I'm torn about the Idrissa Guy link for the simple reason that I was never necessarily the biggest fan of him, as you know, when he was here the first time. I certainly don't view, I'd argue that Alan is a replacement there or thereabouts to just a kind of guy, because I don't view him as a number six. You can take the ball off the defence and, you know, take the ball on the half term and, you know, play passes into feet out of the back four. To me, he's a player like Alan who goes around the pitch putting out fires. I always felt he was a little bit ill-disciplined in terms of his positioning. I thought his use of the ball was average, but what he was good at was pressing, and, you know, I think that's one season he had the most tackles, didn't he?
Yeah.
In one of the campaigns. There's me saying a distrust football stats, but when it suits me arguments, you know, it's just hypocritical, that, isn't it, really? So I'm torn about it. The other thing is, he's 33, isn't he, in September?
Mm-hmm.
So I would just imagine now, if he hadn't played for Everton, and bear in mind he'd probably on decent money if he comes on a free and all that, if he hadn't played for Everton, we said we're going for him, I wonder what the supporters would have said then. Mm. I know that's a hypothetical thing, but to me it does make sense in the midfield issues we've got, as we spoke about there, that we do need somebody with a little bit more bite, and there's probably concerns over Alan's fitness as well, and he's only got 1 year left on his contract.
Mm.
There's that, and there's also the aspect, as Joe was saying there, about structuring the deals. There's no fee involved, no cash sums involved. It sort of fits in with our financial circumstances at the moment. He's known by the club. I presume he still likes playing here. But so I'm sort of torn, you know. I can see why we would want to buy him, and I think financially why it makes sense. But at the same time, I don't really see him as being a proper number six.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think as Adam kind of alluded to, it stinks of a response to the situation Everton find themselves in after, you know, several years of excess in the transfer market, but without forward planning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that had he not been known to us and Everton were on the brink of signing someone who's approaching 33 and, you know, possibly, you know, for next year or two, we may well have been a little bit more concerned. But obviously, there is a gap in midfield, as we've just spoken about. Yeah, there are other issues with Guy as well in the background. You know, obviously, there was a little bit of controversy in France around, you know, him last season as well, which we'll probably come on to if he does end up signing for the club. But I think ultimately, you know, it shows where Everton are at the moment. They're in a situation where, you know, it's not a case of anybody will do if anything does actually come of it, because, you know, they may well still be conducting due diligence and making decisions about whether or not they think he's the right fit for the club. But I think everybody would think that after £500 million worth of transfer spend in 6 years, you'd be in a situation where you weren't thinking that the solution to your problems with 1 week to go in season was a you know, a midfielder who's approaching 33 years old and seemingly isn't wanted by his parent club. That's not to say that he doesn't have ability, but that's, you know, that's perhaps where we are. I think we're almost seeing, I think, two separate transfer windows from Everton this season, where, or the summer, where you have the short-term pragmatic approach, which is, this is a side that only just avoided relegation last season. It has holes. It needs to be patched. They need to be patched up as a matter of urgency, and anything will do. But, you know, obviously if they sign Guy, then that'd be an indication of that. And then, so you almost have the short-term plan. Tarkowski, 29, I mean, he could go for several years. I think everybody agrees he strengthens the side in more ways than one. But obviously it's a case of experience and resilience and robustness at the back, bearing in mind the injuries that they had at centre-back position last season. And then there's the other element of the transfer window or policy, which is trying to kind of almost lay the foundation for Everton in maybe 2 or 3 years' time, where they can perhaps push on a little bit, hopefully after, you know, Frank Lampard has stabilised and Kevin Fowler has stabilised the club and start to take them forward. And hopefully as some of the financial, you know, profit and sustainability issues kind of fade into the background. And that's where you see signing someone like Dwight McNeil, who at only 22 could well be go on to bigger and better things, and could use Everton as a, you know, this could be a new start for him. And he's got a long career ahead of him if he does well. And obviously these predate Lampard and Fowler, but obviously in Mikalenko, in Patterson, you have players there that could be for the future as well. And certainly in terms of what Frank's saying about some of the younger players that look like, at the moment, look like that they're going to be held on to. This might change depending on the transfer market, but Stanley Mills, Lewis Warrington, Reece Welsh, like, you know, as it stands, they look like they're going to stay with the first team, unless real opportunities that can't be turned down come for them to go on loan. So you almost have that dual approach from Everton at the moment, where it's, they need just the bodies and the experience to make sure that they avoid a relegation battle next season, combined with the sowing the seeds for 2 or 3 years, when hopefully Everton are a club with real forward momentum, being led by the likes of perhaps, you know, McNeil, Patterson and Anthony Gordon and some of these young talents coming through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's spot on what you're both saying. To be honest, I think, you know, Everton are kind of have dealt with this hand in the transfer window almost, aren't they? And, you know, Gav, if let's say, for example, that Idrissa Gueye does join Everton, do you think that's the midfield problem solved, or would you still want another body in there? I mean, you know, we're talking about another forward coming in as well. Would you still want another midfielder as well on top of that?
It depends, doesn't it? Because it depends if we can get rid of anybody, doesn't it? But we're talking about the wage bill, aren't we? And, you know, and there we are then saying we should get more midfielders in. You know, it depends on who we can get rid of, which is one of the points. I was going to mention this point last week about, you know, where people were, you know, Farhad's statement when he said, like, judges at the end of the transfer window, and people were saying, well, we can't do that. You know, it's 5 games into the season. It's too late. But that's spot on, because we need to enter the transfer window to try and get rid of players, not just buy them. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we can get, if there's one or two in the midfield who can leave, and I think we're talking there, Army Gomez would be one, wouldn't he, for a start?
Gomez, Gubaman.
Yeah. There's two, you know, one or two there. Yeah, we would need one. I still don't think that guy's a six. You know, I still think he's more of a
Interesting though, if we're playing this, you know, 3-4-3 system, shall we call it? Do you need the number six?
Well, that's a very good point. But you still want a six if you're playing four at the back, don't you? You know, we still need a six. I think that's a good point. You can have sort of, if you play three at the back, three centre halves, you can sort of have two runners a little bit more in the middle. So, yeah, ideally I'd like to bring one in, but obviously that's dependent on two going out the door by the end of August. So it would be interesting, A, what their role will be if they did come in, and B, who is the two go out the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I think Everton, in an ideal world, would probably want two centre midfielders and another forward option in this window. Yeah. Obviously, talk about players that might be able to leave over the course of the summer. You know, obviously, they lost centre midfielders through their contracts expiring in this summer, and you know we know that there's a big hole there because Everton's most influential centre midfielder last season was Fabian Delph, who's mm-hmm. left, and I think everyone can understand why his contract, why he's left the club and wasn't offered a new deal, you know, because of his age and his own injury concerns. But I don't think anybody's under any illusions that there's gaps there in terms of, you know, not just experience and ability, but also ability as well and influence. We saw how much of a difference in that relegation battle, just like we saw how much of a difference it meant when Mina was on the pitch, which was fleetingly, but just enough to get Everton over the line. It was the same with Fabian Delph.
Yeah.
He was just about enough to make enough appearances in those past eight games, in the last eight games of the season, to positively influence Everton's survival campaign. So regard whether or not Gay comes in, you know, I think that going into the last month of the season, it will probably be a case of looking for strengthening with two midfielders. I mean, even if Gomez and Gbamin stay, you know, they've had their own injury concerns as well. There is just a reality there. Fitness. Tom Davis had a really bad injury last season, mm-hmm. picked up another knock in between the Blackpool and the Kiev games as well. So obviously there also does mean that there's an opportunity there for the likes of Lewis Warrington or Isaac Price to come through. But I think for them, and the same with Stanley Mills, same with Reece Welch, same with a couple of others, you know, whatever, and really need to give them the best opportunity to come through is to be in a situation where they're 2 or 3 nil up in games with 20 minutes to go, and you can bring them on in a positive situation with no pressure and aid their development that way. Whether or not that's going to happen this season, I'm not sure. It might be a case of, you know, putting them in the deep end straight away, and they may well do well. I think there's a lot of positivity about those young players in there, but I think if they can, their development will be aided by a stronger midfield as well, I think. Mm. So I think there will be plenty of efforts to do that. I think, you know, speaking to Frank after the game against Kiev on Friday, he was saying about the transfer window going so far into the season, and I think from his perspective and from the view of some people in the game, that's causing a lot of clubs to behave a bit differently in the transfer window. And, you know, some clubs are holding off on signing players. Some clubs are holding off on letting players go before they kind of get a fair indication as to where they are at the moment, because also pre-season has been shorter because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously Everton are going into this Saturday's game with a lot of question marks. I think most Premier League clubs are going Chelsea clearly are. I think, you know, of the Premier League, you know, you look at Man City and Liverpool, and yeah, they are just long-term projects that are just, you know, going on at their own pace and moving forward each season, it seems. You look at Arsenal, they look like they've had a very good pre-season, did a lot of early business and have played a lot of games, and it looks positive for them. But beyond that, I think there are a lot of clubs, you look at Leicester, that haven't signed anybody of note. Sounds like they're starting to have their own issues or concerns about financial fair play, you know, the profit and sustainability. I think there's going to be almost the first fortnight of the season where a lot of the clubs are trying to judge where they are, and then there'll be a mad scramble at the end as they realise that either we're overstocked, we're better than we thought we were, we can try and get rid of a few players, or, oh no, we're in real trouble here. You know, we might have to kind of, you know, cast aside our aspersions and start spending a bit of money. So where Everton fit within that and whether they benefit from that or not, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But
what you're predicting is that you're not going to get any sleep for like the last 48 hours of your like first deadline day experience.
This is my first transfer window in the job, and I already hate it. I think it's going to be a terrible, terrible month.
Well, I mean, we've got that to worry about towards the end of the month, but I think that's all we've got time for today. We'll be back a little bit later on this week to preview Everton's first match of the Premier League season, taking on Chelsea at Goodison Park on Saturday evening. But for now, thank you, lads, for joining me, and thank you for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.